Since 2014, a crisis has been unfolding in the Xinjiang province of China. The Chinese government stands accused of the most serious human rights abuses against Uyghur Muslims, an ethnic minority group, in relation to policies which suppress and even eradicate their religion and culture. Human rights groups have reported on issues including large-scale detention camps, forced labor, sterilization programs, and widespread surveillance. China rejects the allegations, claiming that its policies exist solely to address terrorism and extremism and provide re-education. By the end of February 2021, the United States, Canada, and the Netherlands had passed motions declaring the persecution of the Uyghur a genocide. This follows a global debate on how to respond to the Uyghur situation specifically, and also renewed focus on how best to address the crime of genocide itself to avoid repeating past failures and ensure accountability. Rahima Mahmood is a senior executive member of the Uyghur Congress. She has translated testimonies from Uyghur survivors who have escaped China, and at the IBA Human Rights Institute webinar on genocide in February 2021, she relayed the harrowing experience of the Uyghurs in Xinjiang.
I feel fortunate that my parents died. They didn't live to see this horror. I believe people already know the numbers and how many people have been detained. Some say 1 million, we say 3 million. And children separated from families, forcibly removed and placed in the so-called state orphanages. There are a lot of news photographs of Uyghurs forced to dress up like Chinese, singing the Chinese red songs, denouncing the Islam and celebrating the Chinese New Year. And I cannot imagine how my sisters and brothers, if they were forced into that, I don't know how they're coping. And the latest, BBC news report about the gang rape. I'm sure you must have already watched the report about Tursunay Ziauddin and her plea, what happened to her. I translated another interview, a radio interview for her recently. And when she was asked, what do you want to say to the world? And this is what she said. I want to ask the world, all the evidence about my situation is laid bare in front of you, including the beatings and various forms of torture that I have suffered. And I even lost my womb. I came forward to reveal the most painful, unspeakable horror and shame which I was subjected to because of the severity of the situation back home. If the world still closes its eyes to this, I will believe that it's okay for anyone to rape anyone else without being held accountable. If that is not the case, I ask you to try the Chinese Communist government in court for me. If we have human rights, then I want the world to set up a court hearing to hold China accountable to protect our human rights. If there is a legal system in the world, I want to see that.
Jahan Pitalwala, research analyst at the Global Center for the Responsibility to Protect, says that the fact that the Uyghur situation was referred to the International Criminal Court for a preliminary hearing in late 2020 highlights earlier failures by the international community to intervene.
There were warning signs years ago that people have been speaking about and reporting on, including our organization and all our partner organizations, for years. There are mechanisms within the Geneva Human Rights Council. There are mechanisms even in New York for early warning to look at warning signs for atrocity crimes that were systematically ignored and suppressed. So I think that the international community should not have to be grappling with an existential crisis every time something escalates to a situation that is beyond their control. They should be engaging with all the early warning mechanisms and with civil society at such an early stage, the minute the alarm bells start to ring, which in this situation was a few years ago. We always come to this point where something, an international mechanism, either gives us a disappointing result or fails us, and the situation begins to escalate even more when we shouldn't even be here in the first place.
Erwin Kotler, former Attorney General of Canada, echoed Pitalwala during the Human Rights Institute webinar.
When we speak about the crime of crimes of genocide, I'm reminded of what makes the Holocaust and the genocides that followed in Rwanda, in Srebrenica, in Darfur, in Myanmar, and now with regard to the Uyghurs, what makes all these genocides so unspeakable are not only the horrors of the genocides themselves. That would be bad enough. What makes them so unspeakable is that they were preventable. And so the question is, what is it that we can do?
Lisa Nandy, the UK's Shadow Secretary of State for Foreign and Commonwealth Affairs, outlined the steps she considers the UK government should take.
What is happening in Xinjiang right now is a scar on the conscience of the world. We cannot claim in any sense not to know what is happening. We've had repeated testimony about the forced labour camps, about the women who've been systematically raped, sexually abused and tortured. We've seen harrowing accounts of women who faced forced sterilisation and forced IUD insertion. And the government's own statistics, the Chinese government's own statistics, show that birth rates in Xinjiang fell by a third in 2017 to 2018. If the global community is to be taken seriously by China, then we have to back up what are increasingly strong words with action. So there are four things that we want the government to do. The first is to bring forward Magnitsky sanctions on the Chinese officials responsible for what is happening in Xinjiang. We've already seen those sanctions imposed on Chinese officials by the United States. So it is not right to say that we can't identify those responsible. The second is that we have some of the weakest regulation on supply chains. 20% of the world's cotton comes from Xinjiang. I know that people in this country would be horrified to learn that unwittingly they are supporting what is tantamount to genocide in Xinjiang. And yet we've got a modern slavery act that the government's own review accepts is not fit for purpose, that places the onus on transparency rather than accountability. Thirdly, there have to be global repercussions, and this is why we should be working with our allies. Finally, the Houses of Parliament have the chance to send a united message to the world that genocide can never be met with indifference.
Baroness Helena Kennedy QC, director of the IBA Human Rights Institute and a member of the UK House of Lords, has been heavily involved in House of Lords' proposed all-party amendments to the UK government's trade bill, which relate to determining whether genocide is taking place. The initial proposal to have a court make a determination was rejected, but advocates continue to propose alternatives to ensure a genocide determination could carry implications for future trade.
The British government's position is, look, there is a court to deal with this, the International Court of Justice. We know that the International Court of Justice can't do it because they will not get the buy-in from the nations of the world because of the power that is exerted by China. And we're having to look for mechanisms that somehow do not allow China to stop itself being investigated.
There's a moment in time here where around the world, nations can decide we could take a step to look at evidence and to see whether it passes the standard for and the threshold for genocide. And if it does, then we have to look at the ways in which we trade with this nation. And it wouldn't be a conviction, but it would be a declaration of the fact that the evidence passed the threshold to determine that a genocide was taking place.
There would be a huge public debate in Britain about, do we put trade ahead, or do we put trade ahead of the human rights of a whole people? Or do we feel that this would make us complicit in a crime? Our parliament would have to decide, should we be trading with a genocidal nation?
Sir Ian Duncan Smith, former leader of the UK Conservative Party from 2001 to 2003, reflects on the failures to formally identify and take action on genocide.
Any government can declare they believe that X country has committed genocide. But our government at the moment is being told they shouldn't because it's a matter for the courts. The problem is right now that after 75 years since this was originally brought forward, the whole concept of genocide, There has never been a single moment when a genocide in being, that is happening at the moment, has actually been defined as a genocide through the courts. It's only after the event that that has happened, and really only in a couple of cases where that has been allowed to happen. And invariably, that's because whichever administration was committing the genocide in itself lost. Until we get the courts to do it, then we are guilty as the people who are committing the genocide.
Aldo Zamit Border is head of research and investigations for the Uyghur Tribunal.
The Uyghur Tribunal is a people's tribunal that was set up in 2020 to investigate widespread allegations of mass atrocities being committed against the Uyghurs and other Turkic minorities. And the tribunal will, of course, examine these allegations together with explanations and justifications provided by the People's Republic of China. The overall point of the Uyghur Tribunal is to ensure that such widespread allegations are not left unheeded, but are carefully considered in an impartial and independent way. We have worked hard, a team of us, to set up what is perhaps the largest evidence database on this matter in existence currently. Ideally, you would have an independent and impartial court assessing these matters. However, unfortunately, you know, because of geopolitics, it is highly unlikely that any such court or tribunal will be formally established within the United Nations system or indeed within other international law systems. One of the aspects of justice is sort of the right to truth and the right to know what has happened. And the People's Tribunal, in this case, the Uyghur Tribunal, can very much contribute to the discovery of the right to truth. It is not ideal, but it is the best we can have for the victims at this specific moment. The panel will act as a jury, if you will. They will consider the evidence, and they will consider whether, you know, the facts have been established or not. Once that determination is made, the conclusions of the Uyghur Tribunal will be hard to ignore.
While the tribunal's future conclusions could potentially be influential, states should examine their responsibilities under the Genocide Convention regardless, says Zamit Border.
Of course, I am not able to pronounce on whether or not the tribunal will find that genocide is occurring at this stage. However, it will raise the bar for states to act in the face of these allegations. If there is, of course, a suspicion or a sense that the crime of genocide is being committed in Xinjiang, then the Genocide Convention is clear on this point. States have a responsibility to prevent it in ways in which they can. There is nothing in the convention written about, firstly, you need a determination by an independent tribunal. That is an additional sort of hurdle that was added post hoc, if you will.
Erwin Kotler also presented a framework for action.
The first thing is that we need not only to unmask and expose these crimes against humanity, the ultimate crime against humanity, genocide, but act upon them so as to secure justice for the victims and accountability for the human rights violators. Second, to call upon the UN to appoint an independent, impartial, international investigative mechanism with unfettered access to the Xinjiang region. Number three, we need to enhance parliamentary determinations that what is happening in the Xinjiang region targeting the Uyghurs is in fact genocide. After a urgent two-day hearing last July, the Canadian Parliamentary Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on International Human Rights unanimously adopted and made a determination that what is happening is genocide and commended that determination to the Canadian government. I have recently asked the Canadian Minister of Justice to refer the issue of whether there is a genocide targeting the Uyghurs to the Supreme Court of Canada for an advisory opinion. That mechanism is available under a Canadian law, and that can juxtapose both the parliamentary determination with a judicial determination. Number four, the US, Canada, the UK, the EU should invoke and implement the responsibility to protect the R2P doctrine, committing thereby the international community to action. Number five, what has been mentioned again, to impose global justice for Sergei Magnitsky sanctions targeting the individual human rights violators, as the United States has done. But we now can have a critical mass of such sanctions because the EU has recently adopted global justice for Sergei Magnitsky sanctions. So if we combine the EU along with the US and Canada and the UK and others, we can have an effective Magnitsky sanctions system. Number five, we need to adopt in our respective parliamentary democracies, in other words, forced Uyghur labor, slave labor prevention legislation to sanction and prevent products made with forced labor from entering our markets. At the same time as we should monitor investment by technology companies that are involved in supporting the pervasive state surveillance of the Uyghurs. Number seven, we should expedite refugee applications of Uyghurs who are fleeing persecution and protect Uyghurs in Canada and other countries from threat, harassment, and more that are emanating from the People's Republic of China. Number eight, we should take up the case and cause of dual nationals. Number nine, the ICC said they did not have jurisdiction because China was not a state party. But if the crimes are committed on territories that are state parties, such as Tajikistan, where we've seen forced transfer of Uyghurs back to China, then the same analogies that worked in other principles and precedents, whether it be the US and Afghanistan, where the US was not a state party, or Israel in the situation in Palestine, where Israel was not a state party, the court took jurisdiction there. They can take a jurisdiction here if the crimes have been committed on the territory of a state party.
Juliette Pawe, Senior Research Analyst at the Global Center for the Responsibility to Protect, considers how action could be taken by the international community.
The international community have the opportunity to intervene. And I think what they now do with the Uyghurs in China is, for example, they stop cooperating. They start banning working together with companies that use labor from the Uyghur, the Xinjiang region. So those are kind of the things that are less visible for everyone in the world because everyone looks at the Security Council, at the ICC and all that limitations. But there are also great bilateral examples of how things are being addressed. And I think these are the ones that we should encourage other states to follow and forget about the Security Council and the ICC at sometimes when it's just not ready.
During the Human Rights Institute webinar, IBA Executive Director Mark Ellis underlined the importance of state responsibility.
What's happened over the last 10 years or so is a dramatic shift in this issue of universal jurisdiction. So rather than have an absolute definition that gives states a great latitude, you now have conditions placed on them, and it has dramatically weakened the universal jurisdiction reach. The responsibility to protect, do we all remember that? That was a fanfare that came up from the General Assembly back in 2005. That was the responsibility of all states to protect their citizens, specifically from genocide, crimes against humanity. 15 years later, where are we with that? No one talks about it because it is essence, I think, has just simply disappeared. And that is an example yet again of the failure of states to undertake their responsibility to ensure that these crimes do not occur. We need to get back to state responsibility. We need to get back to ensuring that states adopt and enact a more aggressive universal jurisdiction approach. And that will be a very powerful instrument to ensuring that these crimes are halted, and most importantly, to ensure that individuals who commit them know that they're going to be brought to justice. And all states have the responsibility to do that, regardless of where the individual is from, regardless of where the acts took place.
Sir Ian Duncan Smith.
It is time for the free world, the believers in democracy and justice, to come together and to find a way through this morass that has failed us in 75 years. And when we said we would never see the Holocaust happen again, the sad truth of it is we have again and again and again, and we haven't stopped it.